Tonight's reading is from the song Superstition, which was originally put together by Stevie Wonder and Jeff Beck. My favorite version is actually the one by Stevie Ray Vaughan. Here are the words. When you believe in things that you don't understand, then you suffer. Superstition ain't the way. When you believe in things that you don't understand, then you suffer. Superstition ain't the way. So, as you know, we are going through each week, and we've been covering my newest book, The Three Principles of Oneness, How Embodying the Cosmic Perspective Can Liberate Your Life. And we're into the section that is called Ask Sensei. And so these are basically questions that folks have written into me over the years. And so each night we do our service, I'm going to present a question. So this is a question that was asked by Nancy. She says, "Dear Sensei, my husband is obsessed with astrology and various fortune-telling practices. What is your view?" So, I may need my Ito-san glasses here to see a little bit. So, it's a good question, and it's a very interesting idea to explore. You know, like, where does all this interest in fortune telling, astrology, all those sort of things come from? And so, as I go into this and I explain it, I want to be clear that I'm not disparaging anyone, and I'm not criticizing anyone necessarily. Because I think we all have certain superstitions that sort of come into our lives at different times. And so I don't want this to be heard as a sort of a smear of anyone who has those interests. But I do want to offer an opinion that I think is mindful and might be very helpful. So this person, she's asking about her husband, who is very concerned about astrology and things of that nature. And while I understand the desire to know the future, and I get the impulse that people have around that. I mean, we all would like to know that in some sense. People say that anyway. Boy, I'd like to know the future. And they believe that if they knew the future, somehow I think they generally have a sense that it would be very positive. Some people want to know the future. I think it's because they're anticipating all the good things that might happen. Not really thinking about the possibility that the future might bring very hard things. And that where they're at now might be much more fun than where they will be in some future state. And so it's an interesting thing to ponder. And I would say that this whole desire to do this is something that's been with us for a very long time. Now, the first thing I can say off the top of my head about all of this is that humans are terrible prognosticators. I mean, they're awful at it. They're extraordinarily bad at it. They have a hard time predicting. With all the science and tools we have a hard time predicting weather more than a few days at a time. So the hubris and audacity that we would have to think that we would somehow have the ability to see the future is kind of incredible. So I just want to say that right off the bat. And one of the reasons that people are sort of drawn to this kind of thing is because it's probably always been with us. There's a reality here that we have to deal with, and that is that our brains are constantly looking to make sense out of things. I mean, you might even say that part of being a human being is that we try to make sense of things. And so, you know, we see shapes, we see forms, we see patterns. And it's one of our gifts. And I mean, that can be everything from, you know, looking at a cloud and seeing an animal or something like that, or looking into woodwork. I always remember out at my father's ranch, the woodwork at times when I was out there one time, I was just sort of sitting and looking at all the woodwork and sort of staring, you know. And I started to realize that most of the woodwork had images that looked like aliens to me. You know, the classic gray alien with the big eyes and the head. I mean, I saw it everywhere then. Everywhere I looked, all the wood grain, I saw these little alien faces coming out. And so that's what we do. And, you know, it's an advantage to us because that's how we created geometry. That's how we created mathematics. I mean, so it's brought a lot of benefits to us. But that part of our brain doesn't know when to stop working. And it's been designed by nature to look for things that are either dangerous or novel. So things that might be, you know, a threat to our being, or things that are new. And this part of the brain is constantly filtering out everything else. And it's one of the reasons, in fact, that human beings have a tendency to be more negative than positive. And this is, you know, a cosmic perspective, but it's an evolutionary trait that this trait or this sort of direction whereby we would look for the danger or look for the novel. That's how we were able to get to the top of the food chain. That's how we were able to figure things out. But it does give us a tendency to see the negative. And it also, I think, in many ways is a part of that voice that all of us have, which is critical. You know, that chronic critical voice that will come in and tell you that, you know, you're not doing it right or you're not good enough. Some of us, that voice is constant. Well, that's where it comes from. That's an evolutionary understanding of that. It's a persistent conditioning of perfectionism. So that's where it comes from. And that's why we have those critical voices, or we have a tendency to be more negative than positive, or it seems like it takes a lot more work to be positive than negative. That's all. It was a survival situation. And it served us very well. But just like anxiety in the short term, or fear in the short term, can be useful to us, in the long term, it's not. And when it turns into a chronic type of anxiety, it just debilitates us. Well, the same thing is true with this aspect. So, but let's look at, you know, she asked particularly about astrology. So let's look at that. So where would this have come from? Why would early humans have gotten so involved in astrology? And I would say that astrology is probably the oldest form of fortune telling or some sort of mechanism by which you try to discern the fates. Well, I don't think it's that difficult to understand. Our earliest ancestors, going back hundreds of thousands of years, would have spent most of their leisure time in the evening. Because most of the time that they would have spent hunting, or they would have spent foraging, or they would have spent, you know, building or working on things, it would have been during the day. And they wouldn't have probably had a lot of time for discourse or contemplation. But in the evening, around the life-giving fire, they would have looked at the sky, and they would have allowed their conversation to become more questioning about things, more reflective. And so as they looked at the heavens, and believe you me, they saw them in a way that very few people are able to see them today, because of all the light that we have that comes from electricity. It's very hard for us at times, depending on where we're living, to see the stars the way that our ancestors saw. And they were smart. And so they spent their time looking at these stars and And they began to relate to the stars, and they were trying to experience, you know, as we said, you know, as humans experience this sense of separation and believed that they were no longer one, they wanted to find ways to overcome that feeling. And so they did that by trying to connect with the heavens. And they built structures to sort of mimic what they saw in the heavens. And they named them. And they connected their story, their narrative as a tribe, as a people, to these heavens. And so it's not hard to understand how they would have begun to see patterns. You know, I mean, you look at stars, you like look at the Milky Way, or you look at, you know, the Big Dipper. You know, it's not hard for someone, and you point it out, right? Some of them are hard. I mean, you can tell that we can't see stars the way the ancient people did in most places on Earth, because they had such patterns that are very hard for us to make out sometimes. But something like the Big Dipper, right? It looks like a ladle. Well, that doesn't really exist there. There's no ladle there. But rather, it's what we project onto it. That's what we have done. And we have gone a step further as the zodiac was created. And they began to look at when people were born, because they were very obsessed with time and the passage of seasons, the cycles of the moon. They began to really try to figure out, what does this all mean? And they probably saw and experienced mysterious things, like how women will menstruate together at the same time. Their cycles will line up. And those cycles will often line up with the cycles of the moon. Now, that's pretty far out, but they saw things like that. They experienced things like that. So it wasn't a big leap for them to think that the movement of the stars and their own lives were somehow connected. And so that's how we ended up with astrology. Probably started off as some kind of primitive astronomy, but very, very quickly became astrology. And I would say that all religions on planet Earth have an astro-theological origin. And if you study them deeply enough, you see the patterns. You see the succession of ideas and names and deities and concepts, and they all go back to an astronomical or astrological origin. So I get it. I understand what they were trying to accomplish. And while I understand this, and I might even admire the ingenuity of it, and this is important, it would require a complete rejection of what we know about our world and life through science to believe that the month you were born in somehow predicts your personality and lifestyle. I'm sorry. I have to say that very clearly, that you would have to reject it. You can believe it if you want, but you'd have to reject rational scientific inquiry. And one of the things that I have learned is that this rejection of the rational, it's not always based on intelligence. You know, people have a tendency to think that superstitious folk are not as smart as other folk. I haven't found that to be the case. I think superstition is when people try to fill the gaps with things they don't understand. But as Stevie Wonder said in the song, when you believe in things that you don't understand, then you suffer. Then you suffer. And so, what can we do? One of the things that I learned was that you can really, really work with the human mind in a way that the human mind will believe in things that can't be proven rationally. I'll give you an example. When I was younger, I learned how to do mentalist tricks from a very, very good mentalist, a magician who could do all kinds of sleight of hand, but his focus was mentalism.
hypnosis, reading minds, and doing cold reads and things of that nature. And he taught me how to do it. And for a time, we even performed together. I did martial arts things, like, you know, all kinds of different breaking and lying on a bed of nails while someone broke concrete all over my chest. And I put little spikes through my skin here and lifted up buckets. Stood on a sword. And he did all the mentalist stuff. And we worked together and became good friends. But I learned from him how he did these things. I learned how he did these mentalist tricks. And once I learned how it was done, it made it very hard to fool me. It makes it very hard to fool me because I know how to do it. I know how it works. And I remember one time I did a retreat. And in this retreat, I wanted to share with people, you know, some of the things that I had learned and help them to understand that superstitious thinking generally creates more suffering than anything else, and a lack of one's personal sense of control over their life. It makes one a helpless victim, fate, or circumstance. And so I did this retreat, and I did everything real straight. You know, I told some people their fortunes. I told things about them and what would happen to them in the future. I did cold readings where I read someone's mind. And I did that in the morning. And then in the afternoon, I revealed the secrets. I showed them how I did it. But here's the thing. A lot of them were very unhappy when I did that. They so wanted to believe that they became angry when I revealed how it was done. And some couldn't believe that I didn't have some kind of power to see into their fate. They just wouldn't let go. And that showed me how persistently strong people have that need for something outside of them to give them direction, something outside of them to sort of tell them where to go. Another area that I've studied that is very similar to some of these concepts is the use of things like the I Ching. The I Ching is a very famous Chinese oracle, very old. And you roll coins, or you can use yarrow sticks and do sort of like a pickup sticks thing. And then you use these trigrams that make hexagrams together. And then there's, with each number series, there's a little parable or a little storyline that goes along with it. And it even is moving. It has moving lines. So there are lines that are broken lead you to another hexagram. So it's very dynamic. And people for centuries have, you know, chosen the I Ching as a way to sort of tell their fortune or fate. And so I learned everything I could find out about the I Ching. I studied it in great detail, worked with it myself. And what I discovered was that it didn't have the ability to tell the future. That it was dead wrong. I tested it. Because I think you should question everything and always keep an open mind. It was not correct. But here's something I did come through in my studies. That did come through was that I think that tools like this, whether they be something like the I Ching or something like the tarot card readings or something like astrology, I think what they do is they reveal the subconscious mind of the individual. In other words, when that person rolls the coins, or picks the sticks that gives them the corresponding numbers that they make the hexagram in the I Ching, and then they read what it has to say.
often they will find it uncanny. Why? Because it's revealing something about the subconscious mind, the part of their mind that they're not consciously aware of, and it brings it forth to them. Now, the only downside to this is that if their conditioning is such that they're heavily negative, then they're going to sort of be drawn to the possibilities that seem negative. And if they're positive, they're going to be overly drawn to the ones that seem positive. So again, it can reflect the subconscious mind, and it can be useful in some sense that way. But that's it. That's it. I remember a few weeks back, I was visiting with my mom, and we got some Chinese. And of course, there's the obligatory fortune cookie. And I remember when we were opening up our fortune cookies, one of the cookies was negative. It was sort of foreboding. And I know that everybody sitting there was not a superstitious person. I certainly am not. But there was a sort of a pail that fell over the conversation. And it was really curious to me. It was really curious to me how, even when you're a really rational person who uses science for knowledge, even so, there's a little bit of you like, well, I wonder. I wonder if it's possible that a fortune cookie that was printed out en masse through some sort of random computer system would have ended up giving a saying that would have an impact on my life and determine my future. It sounds ridiculous when you say it out loud, but yet that's how we feel drawn. That's how we feel drawn. And like I said, when it comes to fortunes or whatever it is, if we're in a positive mindset, we're going to be drawn to the things that are positive. But boy, if we're in a negative mindset, we're going to be drawn to the things that are negative. We'll interpret one thing one way than the other. And as far as the bland fortunes that go out, the truth of the matter is that when I did that trick at that retreat, I just took random paragraphs that could be said about anyone at any given time and just randomly assigned them to people, and they believed that, yes, this is something very deep about it. And you know, when it comes to astrology, I'm a Pisces. And in the Chinese calendar, I'm a rabbit. And every time I fit it like a T. If you know me at all and you read a Pisces description or you read a rabbit's description, you would say, holy cow, that's right on. But if you knew my wife and you knew her sign, you would know it was completely wrong. But what does that say? It just says that if these things become an obsession, if we start to let these things dictate our existence, and they will create suffering for us. And they will put us into a powerless place where we feel like we're just a victim of fate. And kismet is more important than the decisions we make now. And honestly, even if it were possible, you know, that somehow you could do it. And you know, there are some scientists that theoretically ponder these ideas, and they'll set up experiments to try to determine. They will tell you that the past, traveling into the past, well, that might be possible. If you had the right sort of time machine, you could go into the past. But they would also tell you that it would be impossible to go into the future. Why? Because even if we accept multiple dimensions and all these possibilities, and the fact that randomness plays a part in the universe, then there's such an infinite variety of outcomes that you would never know which future was going to be collapsed or created. You would never know. And the future you see might not be your future. It might be a future of another line. People use that as a trope in science fiction all the time because it works.
So what are we left with then? What are we left with? What can we do? What I would suggest to this woman asking this question is that I would say that you should examine these beliefs and see why your partner is obsessed with them. Because I guarantee you, if he's obsessed with these things, there's something going on in his conditioning that's leading to this direction. And if you can encourage him to practice something like our four direction system of mindfulness, to really begin to inquire into the nature of his mind and the sources of his conditioning, I think you can help him to discover the real magic that exists in this universe. The real magic that allows us to choose one thought over another. The real magic that allows us to realize that a belief or thought we have dictates the rest of our existence. It dictates the way we feel. It dictates both emotions and physical reactions. It dictates consequence. It just creates this chain. And so if you really want to change your future, learn how to mindfully inquire in how it flows and then make the changes that will bring about a different outcome. I would never want to know the future, because in my experience of life over these past 57 years, I have found that there are some mysteries that are not so much to be solved, you know, like some kind of problem. Rather, there are things to be embraced with not knowing and bearing witness and allowing that dynamic to flow into action. So even if someone did know, I wouldn't want to know. I wouldn't want to know, because it takes away the power of this present. And this present moment is the only thing that you truly live in. So I hope that's helpful. I hope that was helpful to the person that asked the question. And again, in summary, I'm not saying that if you enjoy this kind of thing, that you're an idiot, and, you know, putting you down in some fashion. I'm saying, look, if you enjoy that sort of thing and, you know, it's sort of a whimsy, that's fine. But if you start to use it to make decisions in your life, then you've given up your freedom. You've given up your freedom. And you've given it up over to something that I guarantee you that if you tested it yourself, you would discover that it really doesn't have that power. So enjoy your tarot, enjoy your astrology, but please don't let it dictate your existence. You be the captain of your own mind.